good morning and hi. Welcome to another splodge of Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I am Paul McInnes, and in the following time, we'll be talking to Doves' Jimmy Goodwin, who will grant us access to his Kingdom of Rust. We'll review new music from Patrick Wolf, The Horrors, and Newham Generals and Singles Club. We'll be feeling the chills in the feature with no name, and there'll be smatterings of you lot around the place too. First though, we're going to warm you up with a spoonful of Junior Boys. That's Parallel Lines by Junior Boys, our first guest this week. Comprised of Jeremy Greenspan and Matt Didymus, they may sound like World Bank economists, but they make music fit for parties in the Arctic Circle. Chilly beats and icy vocals, their stock in trade. Their fourth album, Begone Dull Care, is out this week, and Julie the duo came into our pod to talk about it. So I started by trying to get a handle on how the band see themselves. Are they, for instance, happy to be called pop musicians?
Yeah, I think we do. Like, in the sense that pop is such a good word because it doesn't mean anything. You know, because I would openly reject any more specific classification of us other than that. But at least pop implies that we don't want to alienate people. We try to make inclusive music, you know?
And a lot of it is aimed for the dance floor as well. Do you ever find it difficult to strike that balance so that you can still make it funky but also have your noodles?
I think there's a couple of different things at play. Like sometimes there's a kind of a challenge. On the one hand, you want to take the, because we kind of do everything, we mix it and produce it and write the songs and all that stuff. There's all sorts of things to be keep in your mind. You know, you want things to sound interesting. You want the sonic arrangement to be interesting. You want all of the sounds to be interesting. But at the same time, you're also concerned as a songwriter, as a lyricist, as everything, you know, and you're sort of saying, well, which one is more important? Which one am I focusing on? And ultimately, there is no one that's more important than the other. But I think the key is essentially to always remember that the audience, and that is not just your fans, but people as a whole, are always more sophisticated than most people give them credit for. Because when bands do experimental things, you'll often find that the population will, if the music is good and if they're committed to a band, then they'll often go off into strange directions with them, you know? It's like, you know, the Beatles were no less popular when they became strange, you know? In fact, they were probably more popular, you know. An idea in electronic music by people who I think who are the best at it, that the mixing process and the arranging process is sort of an art in itself. And sometimes, like, something happens when you're mixing down and stuff like that you just can't replicate. And, you know, and sometimes you'll do one mix that works, but you forgot to do this, or, you know. So it's always, like, I find making our music is probably a lot more stressful than how other people work, you know.
And do some of these glitches, some of these mistakes, then make it through beautiful serendipity into the finished process?
I mean, that's the entire philosophy of how we work, is to try as much as possible to nurture the mistakes of the record. So our album is just filled with mistakes.
100% guaranteed mistakes.
Exactly, yeah.
So you tell me about this Norman McLaren film from what I've read. This is where the album Begone Dull Care took its name from. It's a very beautiful piece of work that matches, presumably, the artist's original drawings and paintings to Oscar Peterson music. How did this inspire your album?
Well, on the one hand, I was inspired just on the basis that I liked his work, and I also think that, you know, just as a lot of musicians take influence from music, I take a lot of influence from other things as well as music, and in particular, I really liked his stuff. But more than that, as I became more interested in him and his techniques and his methodologies and I think his philosophy to some extent, I felt a sort of a kinship, a similar set of ideals,
and principles about how to work and what the purpose of working is, and because I wanted this album to be sort of somewhat self-referential, just because of the fact that it was our third album, and it comes at a funny time, you know, like you make a first album and you're sort of, you know, amused that you're able to do it. You make a second album and you can't believe you're sort of making a second album. And then you get to a third album, and then apparently you have a career, you know?
Yeah.
And which for me seems absurd, you know? I never banked on having a music career. I never thought I would. I didn't work tirelessly to do it. I think that on a certain point, I think that there's something to be said for... I think there's something wrong with people who feel a sense of entitlement to their music careers. You know, music is not a career. It's a rare thing that you're able to get paid for. Most people don't, and they don't do it. If you're doing it for the right reasons, you're not doing it for that. And I hate professionalism in music. I hate people who do things because it's the right thing to do for their career and all that sort of stuff, you know? But I wanted to make an album that reflected not only that, but reflected where I felt I was. You know, I think it's important to be really honest in making music, because what other point is there? And if I'm being honest about it, then I have to say, well, I can't really write a record about my life that ignores the fact that I'm doing music and music business all the time.
How do we find Berlin right now? As you were, Berlin seems to me a kind of quite a... perhaps the international capital of dance music right now. Is it a good place to be when you're making music?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know how much it's changed the way that that we do music, in the sense that I don't really feel like I've been Berlined or something. Like, a lot of people speak if they go there and, you know, and they, you know, they start making minimal techno after 2 weeks or something like that, and it's not something that's happened to me. But I think I had a pretty good sense of the music scene there before I went there. I mean, it's a really nice place to be, and it's inexpensive, and there's lots of massive arts community there, and so it's a good in that capacity, but I don't really feel like part of the, like, Berlin scene or anything. Mm.
Yeah. Can I ask you one final question about the internet? You've always been a band that's embraced the internet, for, you know, from simple things like blogs to being kind of at the forefront of the putting up your content for remixing and mashing up. How did you feel when this album Begone Dull Care leaked onto the internet months before you were going to release it?
I think we were both kind of expecting it.
I mean, I was 100% expecting it. I don't like it. I don't like it, not necessarily because... I don't blame people out there who see it leaked and decide they want to listen to it. I do certainly blame whatever journalist or publicist or whoever it is who is given the privilege of an album before it's released, and not just my album, but any album. That's a trust issue that you're giving someone to listen to, and they don't have to put it up. There's no reason for them to do that. And I think most of the people who do put it up do it for ego reasons, and I think that's a shame. I think once an album is released, there are a lot of advantages to it being available for everyone. With a band like us, it's nice to think that if you like the album, you'd buy it, if only because we're not so big a band that... it doesn't make an impact on us.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not like you're going out and gold plating your helicopter.
No, exactly. But that being said, you know, it's a certain reality that is, you know, it's something that you just adapt to. I just think it would be nice for a band to be able to at least release their music in the way they want to. You know?
That was mainly Jeremy Greenspan and a bit from Matt Didymus of Junior Boys, and Begone Dull Care is out now on Domino Records. Rosie Swash.
Yes, hello.
Hi. I think I might have just done another classic mispronunciation on Didymus. I wonder whether it might be Didymus or something. Anyway, let's move on. Sorry to keep you in the background for so long.
That's okay.
There. I hear this week you're particularly excited by the comeback of Spandau Ballet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't really present for the first round. I mean, either, yes, very small. when they were.
So it'd be like getting to know them for the first time.
I can't wait.
So I've got a suspicion you're going to be putting a donk on gold for Singles Club this week. But let's, before we get any further, introduce our other guest. That's Alex Needham, the boss of us all. How are you, Alex?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
What an intro. Cheers, Paul.
Yeah, it's all right. I just kind of trying to keep you buttered up. And then when you're not there, slag you off behind your back. As a courtesy to you, our honoured guest, we're going to kick off this week's Singles Club with your choice. This is Patrick Wolfe and Vulture.
Losing my head to Hollywood. My to London, by you to Tokyo, still on with the show.
That was Vulture by Patrick Wolfe. Patrick Wolfe was born Patrick Apps. He changed his name so as to launch a prodigious musical career and also to avoid being downloaded to the iPhone. He built his first theremin at 13, this is true, and was in his first band, Minty, a year later. Still only 25, this track is taken from Wolfe's fourth album with a fifth already on the slate for next year, and he's probably also building a spaceship in his spare time. Alex?
He was dropped by his record company last year, so he floated himself on band stocks, which is the thing where you can put in £10 or more if you've got more money than sense and have a kind of a stake in the music. So I mean he was always quite a bad fit on a major label because he makes quite sort of niche music, but unfortunately now he's free of the record label. He's gone totally mad and made a kind of horrible sort of S&M themed video to this song, which I think is quite good, but it's a classic. Oh, I can do what I want, so I'm going to commit commercial suicide. Not that he was ever commercially rampant in the first place, but I don't know, it's quite 80s sounding. I mean, he's made music in a lot of different styles. He's quite folky sometimes, but this is like something off Soft Cell's second LP.
I was going to say Soft Cell as well, and you got the specific detail. That is why you're a pro. Rosie, is this distinctly more obscure than what he's done in the past?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing about Patrick Wolfe is he's always just like a bar or two away from a fantastic pop record. And I really feel that willfully he doesn't want to do that. And he's his own worst enemy in that sense. He could be a huge, brilliant pop star, but he never quite allows himself to be that. And exactly what Alex said is now he's just sort of saying up yours to all the people that let him down. The video is, if you haven't seen it, I would advise you to go and look at it. It is so bonkers. It is really weird. And when I first heard it, I didn't actually like this song. And I was like, oh, my ears. And it doesn't ever get into any sort of rhythm and stay there for you to work out what's going on. And obviously that's done on purpose. But by the time I listened to it sort of second, third time, I thought, I actually really like this. This guy is weird and I like that.
I mean, I like this. I like it too. I wonder when you're talking about the kind of that being an inch away from being a pop star, I just wonder whether he's just too clever or like thinks about it too much to allow himself to be a pop star. I think something in the vocals, they're really affected. They sound like a kind of cabaret act or something. And it's almost like he can't go down the line and do a straight, God-honest pop song. He has to try and add bells and whistles and make it full of flair.
Maybe, although the fact that he's made such a lot of music suggests that maybe that is genuinely how his mind works. I mean, he's a bit like Björk in a way, and I think, you know, or Kate Bush perhaps, a bit of an original. But I think as well, he's done songs that could be construed as pop songs, but there's always something a bit wonky about them. I'd almost say that it's due to him not having enough money to do them properly, but then he did last time and it still sounded the same. So yeah, it must be something integral to him.
Okay, Vulture by Patrick Wolfe is not available to buy until the 20th of April, but you can hear it as part of the Battle Megamix on Wolfe's MySpace right now. Next up on Singles Club, it's The Horrors and Sea Within a Sea.
Oh,
At Sea Within a Sea by The Horrors, Faris Badwan and Spider Webb are back, back, back. First the most vaunted, then the most derided band in Britain, The Horrors released their debut album Strange House in 2007 and were guests on this here pod. This is the first track to be previewed from their second album, about which the interwebs is currently abuzz, like a fly which Spider Webb will eat for his tea. See what I did there? Image.
Yes.
Rosie.
Yes, this is my song. Well, they put it up on the website last week, and we put it up on the blog for people to comment on, and a lot of people seemed, you know, very positive about it, more so than I expected. And then there was the odd, oh, it's just totally derivative, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's fantastic and not at all what you would have expected from them, and not that much like the rest of the album, I must say. But it's, you know, it starts off this really gentle krautrock, you know, kind of Neue Can type reference, and then really subtly shifts into shoegaze, and then right at the end, it's like an 8-minute track, it becomes sort of new order synth pop. It's really weird, and the melody completely changes, so it's a great listening experience on its own. And I get Tim Jones that said last week when we were talking about it, oh, it's like a quick flick through their record collection. But you know, there's a difference between a band being influenced by something and taking that and playing around with it and just being totally derivative. They're still, as far as I'm concerned, so much more interesting and, you know, visually interesting and sonically interesting than so many other bands out there. And there's something very sly about what they do. I just think they're a great band. I think this is a great record.
Yeah, I'd see that slyness that you're talking about. I think it's got a real degree of control to it. They have this disaffection. The video that accompanies the song on their website is just, you know, them standing, their faces obscured, no expression. And I think that's carried into the way they take these different influences. And that while there's a real groove there and a real rhythm, it never bursts out. Mm. It's always restrained and tempered. And I think that's really cool. And I think I've always thought The Horrors, while obviously being quite ostentatious, are very cool. Mm. And I think they know what they're doing in that regard. Alex?
I liked it a lot. We've not really heard Faris sing before. He more kind of shouted on the previous album, and his voice is the thing I like least about it a little bit. It's a little bit of an Ian Curtis impersonation. But the last 4 minutes of this song, where it's an instrumental and it is quite synthy, are really beautiful and kind of uplifting in quite a surprising way. I'd also like to point out that if anyone's listening and would like to stalk Faris, he can often be found at 3 p.m. in the Camden branch of Sainsbury's.
How do you know often? Have you seen him there more than once?
I've seen him there more than once. And I've kind of vaguely know him as a former NME person. And, if I'd seen him at another time, I'd kind of acknowledge him. But I haven't done in Sainsbury's because it's kind of, I guess it's a bit uncool to be carrying around your Weetabix when you're the singer out of The Horrors.
I once saw him try 10-pin bowling. And he could barely lift the ball. So emaciated is he. Sea Within a Sea by The Horrors is available to listen now on their site and their MySpace. Final track on Singles Club is Mind is a Gun by Newham Generals. Generals with Mind is a Gun, the first signing to Dizzy Rascal's Dirty Stank label, which I think its emblem is a poo. Newham Generals are DEE and Footsie, and are the first band to be named after a hospital since early 80s girl band Genitourinary Unit. Grime MCs with a penchant for spitting over souped-up rave tunes, they have been described as the Black Prodigy, which must make Maxim feel warm inside. Okay, my choice. And I'm not really sure there's much I can say about why I like this, because it's not my brain that likes it, but my nervous system. I like the break. It's cracking. I like the rave noise, which I believe is a technical term. And that's all. It's a primal thing. It makes me want to dance. I do like the fact that they're playing with and updating a British musical form, though. I think that's something that I'm a big hip-hop fan. That's something that hip-hop always did. They took funk from the 70s and they reworked it in the 80s. And I like the fact that they're taking 90s dance music and reworking it here. One thing I really don't like about Newham Generals, having listened to their album lots of late, is their lyrics. I don't think they're particularly good MCs. They've got quite a formulaic staccato style. And the content is not only generic kind of guns and Well, Guns and Slags. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of got the English vernacular, but it's pretty depressing content. And there are some tracks, particularly Bell Dem Slags on the album, which are really horrible. And I really appreciate the fact that on this track, he's put it through a kind of loud hailer filter so you can barely hear what he's saying. Rosie.
It's interesting that you should say about them, you know, their lyrical prowess, because there's hardly any lyrics on this one, is there? And that's what's, but what there is there is quite good. You know, it's just the repeating that refrain, mind is a gun, and that's quite
Verse, there's a kind of chat verse.
Yeah, and it's really sort of in the background. So it's obviously been produced quite well, I think, this song. I'm not sure, I mean, it kind of, my immediate thought is, you know, Dizzy Rascal did Pussy Hole. This is kind of along that lines. He should have, in my opinion, done a bit more of that, and there should be a bit more of this, because this is quite interesting. And there aren't that many avenues for grime artists to go down now, other than like maybe Funky or something like that, where they all appear to be doing a lot of gimmicky stuff. But yeah, like you said about the, you know, the lyrical content of the rest of the album, it being a bit depressing. What I really liked about grime was the sound of it was never the MCs, which I could really give less of a about. And that's probably the one thing about them that's just a bit like, you know, they should be moving on as much as the people behind them making this music have decided to move on. It's all a bit immature.
I liked it, but it felt a bit like a kind of musical dead end to some extent. That sort of synthesizer noise to denote aggression. There's quite a lot of that about in dubstep as well, people like Casper. And I just wonder whether you can kind of express that kind of feeling in a more sophisticated way. I mean, this, in a way, to me, listening to it updated now sort of shows how long it's been around, and in some ways how we haven't moved on as much as we might have done, or if we have moved, it's kind of been in a loop that's kind of brought us back to the same kind of place. But I mean, they seem to have a sort of personality, and they're quite sparky, and I like their picture in the Observer Music Monthly.
Dressed up in scrubs. That is Mind is a Gun, and it's on the Newham Generals album, Generally Speaking, which is out on April the 6th. We want your reviews of this week's tracks from Patrick Wolf, The Horrors and Newham Generals, and you can post them by going to guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you think of that music there and these other tracks that are out to buy next week. I forgot that there is something hiding in me. Sap. I want that. Can you take Lady Sovereign. So Human. Things change always at the hotel. Always I'll be gone again in 4 days. I've been waiting hours for this. I made myself so sick. I wish I stayed asleep today. Yeah. Lady Gaga, Poker Face. Get him high, show him what I got. Yo, Majesty, Don't Let Go. Thanks to Alex for coming in to join us today.
Cheers, I've enjoyed it.
Oh. And that's it for Singles Club, but catch the texticular column each week at guardian.co.uk/music. Next up, our main guest this week, and that's Doves. I long to feel some beauty in my heart, so I go searching right to the stars. The road back to Preston was covered. That's Kingdom of Ross by Doves, the lead single and title track from their soon-to-be-released album. Originally an electro act, Sub Sob, songwriter Jimmy Goodwin and the Williams brothers Jez and Andy transmuted themselves into Doves at the end of the 90s, and since then have been making what would be categorised as indie music, except it takes in influences as broad as Americana, Northern Soul and dance music in a nigh-on trademark epic sound. They're now gentlemen of a certain age and hail from Manchester, so, after the success of Elbow last year, inevitably there's a lot of buzz around Doves, who traditionally were seen as the more successful relatives of Guy Garvey & Co. I met with Jimmy Goodwin in London last week to talk about the highly anticipated Kingdom of Rust, and started by asking why it had taken a whole 4 years to bring it to fruition.
Well, yeah, it's took a while, but it's not to say we've not been working solidly for 2.5 years on it. It really just took a bit longer to coax it out of each other. I really do mean that. It's, you know, after playing together for so long, you know, there's never any fighting, there's never any... there's just heated debate and discussion, but we all tend to sort of just come round to each other. And there's songs that we've never recorded as many or written as many, and it literally didn't come together till we mastered it in January, mid-January, and we were still fighting over the order 2 days before that. You know, we usually, in the past, you kind of tend to know which one's going to be the first song. You might have an idea for a middle one, or you end up writing one later on because you know you kind of need something like that at that point. Or, you know, you get an idea, oh, maybe we need something. So we discuss it, and it's just, yeah, it's just, it's been a ride. It's been funny. Just to go out and play live again and not discuss these new songs and just play for the first time in nearly two and a half years. Just galvanised us and made us go, right, you know, look, we've got material, we've got good stuff there. And then four songs came, on the back of that, four songs came in like quick succession.
What, songs you wrote?
Well, you know, okay, some went back to an old demo in one instance, I came in with something, that, you know, look, swings and roundabouts, but it just hit that point where it started to flow and it started to get excited.
I think there's a real sense of exploration in this album. I think... First of all, sonically, it covers a really broad range of. I mean, we were talking about Jetstream there, which is a very kind of electronic track, and then we've got a lot of kind of garage rock in there, but also kind of a bit more orchestral sweeps and things.
Yeah,
is that something you wanted to deliberately
well,
to do?
It's never deliberate. It really is. They start revealing themselves. You know, I think every album. I always say every album we've done is kind of like this one. I'm still so close to it. You know, we're lucky we can get away somehow between the three of us of being, you know, dipping a toe in. So we're not trying to pastiche or, you know, be flippant with it. But we've all, you know, yeah, House of Mirrors, you know, that was around in demo form for a while, but we just couldn't lick it. And then we suddenly just we wanted it to be like a sort of Detroit 1967 garage track, you know, and... just thin all that bass, like stuff it through a tiny transistor radio and make it just fucking rinse, you know. I just think it's a really mad collection of songs and we just made it work together. Yeah. That's what takes the time, really. Realising that we still had this chemistry together. Because it's important to me, in it, you know. And it's just really, you know, so when we first, you know, there was days in there where I'm going, are we just doing this out of duty because we've got an option and stuff like that? You know, I'll be honest about that. It's, you know, why are we all here? But we're all here because we need still to do this. And there's still plenty of music between us and we're still kind of learning from each other.
That's Jimmy Goodwin of Doves and Kingdom of Rust is out on April the 6th. Without pausing for breath, let's move right on. The feature with no name, and Rosie Swash is here with the details.
It's Michael Hann on 80s indie pop act The Chills.
First, a word from our friends at Wikipedia. Similar in many ways to the traditional indie pop sound, the Dunedin sound uses jingly jangly guitar play, minimal bass lines, and loose drumming. Keyboards are also often prevalent. Amateur recording techniques also gave this genre a lo-fi sound that endeared its earnest music, but occasionally hard to understand vocal accompaniment, to university students worldwide. Dunedin is a town of around 120,000 inhabitants in the South Island of New Zealand. A quarter of a century ago, it seemed as though every other resident of Dunedin was in a band, usually a really, really good band. The Dunedin sound encompasses scores of groups on the Flying Nun label, some of whom weren't even from Dunedin. The Clean, the Tall Dwarfs, the Bats, the Verlaines, the Straight Jacket Fits, the Jean-Paul Sartre Experience, but most of all, the Dunedin sound means The Chills.
Responsibilities. We teach you to the pupil, it's a gift to play.
The Chills sang strange little songs, sung without embarrassment by their writer, Martin Phillips. He could sort of whisper through the words, or sort of bellow, with not a lot in between. And it always seemed to me as though his parents must have had some peculiar records at home, because the Chills only ever sounded like the Chills. The building blocks were familiar enough to those making music in the wake of punk, the Velvets, the Byrds, garage rock. But the Chills were not alone among the Dunedin groups in adding extra elements. Phillips was particularly partial to the wildly unexpected chord change, and to dousing his songs in organ. The effect was to give their music a woozy, fairground feeling. And because Phillips was also a startling and melancholy melodicist, that gave the songs a combination of strangeness and familiarity that embraces and unfolds the listener. The Chills seem both the strangest and the most obvious thing. Phillips sang what was on his mind. When the Chills started, that meant songs about the doll, about daydreams. It came to mean love songs, songs about friends who died, and eventually, when he became preoccupied with the environment, it came to mean very earnest songs about the health of the oceans and New Zealand's brain drain. All were approached the same way, with utter conviction. It makes some of the environmental songs sound risible now, but the love songs thrived on it. This was someone thinking without metaphor, simply letting his truth spill out. Well, I'm not in love with anyone, but I could fall in love with you. I have no patience for anyone. I don't think Phillips can ever have been an easy man. I've seen him in furies on stage. And a few years ago, with the Chills in abeyance, he developed a heroin habit, suffered from hepatitis, and was caught shoplifting. The Chills more or less lost the 90s to Phillips' difficulties. I believe things are back on track these days. There is a version of the Chills extant, and Phillips has put his problems in the past. But this is, I think, a career unfulfilled. Martin Phillips never became a pop star, and the smattering of records he made gather dust. The names of the Chills and the other Dunedin bands are mentioned from time to time, usually by some young American indie band, but to most people outside New Zealand, this stuff never made it past passport control. It's your loss. At their best, the Chills were an antipodean analogue to REM and the Smiths. Not as profound, not as portentous, but just as wonderfully different. Go and buy some of their records. Unlike Michael Stipe and Morrissey, you know Martin Phillips will be glad you cared enough to listen. Now they're fighting, this bird's frightening, lies are flying, silence boiled, overreacting, see them trying, counteracting, changes in each other, rather forces, force them higher, tears are scalding, anger flows like fire, fluorescent the because she looks for the nervous, he breaks down, and when she goes slowly, ice and soul. Fluorescent Douglas, he is wearing in red, she is too bad in our neighbor's different flower.
That was Michael Hann on The Chills. Let's have a quick fly through some Facebook. Rosie.
SV80 said, the airing of grievances is one of the most consistently brilliant rock albums I've heard in ages, and that is Titus Andronicus interviews last week. On paper, it's difficult to give a sense of what distinguishes them from a raft of similar bands. The key might be the complete lack of subtlety that goes along with idolising Andrew WK, early Springsteen and the Pogues. They have some sharp lyrics, but there's no arch distance or self-conscious sense of their own hipness. I tend to be quite cynical when it comes to hotly tipped guitar bands, but they're living proof that the slightly more accessible end of the US indie scene still has a lot to give.
Wow. good reading there, and typically thoughtful there from SV80. Shane at Unpeeled chimed in. He said, enjoying the TA. Anyone else feel it's a blend of Clash and Green on Red?
Bagel Heart said, the new theme tune sounds like a band I was in once. Am I due some royalties? Well, with that evidence, definitely.
Because you're not going to get them from anywhere else. Chewtoy said, remarkably good episode this week. Thanks.
On our Facebook group, Andrew Rezpa posted, Rosie, congrats on getting promoted onto the front of the past cast cover. That said, I'm not sure about Paul peering at me through his iffy beard as I work. Anyway, keep up the good work, you two. It really is excellent.
Now,
he knows how I feel.
And I've had sleepless nights about this because I'm not sure whether iffy beard he means he just generally doesn't like the beard, which is fair, it's an opinion, or
just
whether
out of control today, yeah, I must say.
Exactly, or whether, yeah, like my beard just kind of is patchy, because if it's patchy, I need to get rid of it. Anyway, if you can clarify, please do post again, Andrew. Right, post your comments on this week's show on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of Doves and Junior Boys and The Chills and all the tracks we reviewed on guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. We are back next Friday. Register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. But that is all for this week. Thank you so much, Rosie Swash.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you all next week. Goodbye.